Good morning. The Capital Investment Committee hearing for April 1st is called to order. A quorum is present. Representative Carroll, can I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved, Chair.
Representative Carroll moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of approving the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The minutes are approved. As always, we have a full agenda today, but we're going to start the committee today with House File 1090. Chair Lee moves 1090 to be referred to the General Register. Chair Lee, would you like to introduce your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to present House File 1090. And so for this one, you know, with Chair Murphy, she has been a great champion of the Library Construction Grant Program. And so the bill before us today would just name the Library Construction Grant Programs under the Department of Education under her name. And with me today, we have two testifiers who can talk more broadly about the program. The bill does not appropriate any money, and that, you know, larger pot will be for further discussion as we build our budget bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lee. So first up, we have a Karen Punsack. Would you please introduce yourself for the record and proceed?
Good morning. Thank you, Chair of the Capital Investment Committee members, for the time to talk about this grant. My name is Karen Punsack. I'm the director for Great River Regional Library, one of 12 regional public library systems in Minnesota. We're headquartered in St. Cloud. House File 1090 asks that the Library Construction Grant Program be renamed in honor of Representative Mary Murphy, an educator and longtime champion of public libraries. Representative Murphy was the longest serving female legislator in Minnesota, serving from 1977 to 2022. Through her leadership, over 120 libraries have been made more accessible to better serve residents across the state, and this bill honors her amazing legacy. From 1994 to 2024, the Public Library Construction Grant Program secured approximately $6.27 in local investment for every $1 of state investment. The Competitive Matching Grant Program provides funding to renovate, expand, or construct a public library. Across the state, over 150 projects have been completed through this program. A quarter of the public library buildings in my region alone have been improved through projects of all sizes. In Foley, we added a handicap accessible door button. In Staples and St. Michael, they constructed new city centers with the library included. And in Little Falls and Sauk Center, elevators were added to two Carnegie libraries, preserving their historic integrity of these library buildings. Most recently, Howard Lake opened the first net zero library in the state of Minnesota. So that means it's generating its own power on site. There's still a lot to do to improve and preserve our state's public library buildings. Over 45 public libraries across the state need repairs, expansion, or new construction, totaling over $175 million. Continuing the work of this grant program is vital to public library users across the state. The library community supports renaming this vital program in Representative Mary Murphy's honor. This move will recognize her amazing legacy as a public library advocate. Thank you, Representative Lee, for authoring this bill, for your support of public libraries, and thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Margaret Stone. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chairs Franzen and Lee, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 1090. Mary Murphy was a longtime advocate for public libraries, and we're grateful for her leadership. So let me tell you why I think she's deserving of this honor. My name is Margaret Stone. I'm director of Dakota County Library, which is one of the eight library systems which make up the Metropolitan Library Service Agency, another one of the 12 regional public library systems in Minnesota. Across the metro area, 40 grants have been awarded through the Public Library Construction Grant Program since 1995. The projects ranged from small ones, such as adding an accessible water fountain, adding accessible power-assisted doors, and making service desks more accessible, to full renovations and expansions. But let me tell you about two that I'm more familiar with. and Dakota County at the Wentworth Branch in West St. Paul, a grant was used to address accessibility issues in public restrooms and other public spaces. In Pleasant Hill Library in Hastings, a grant was used to expand the large meeting room to address the lack of meetings room space for large groups in that community. Now, both of these projects were done during major renovations of the building, but county funds were not available to cover that additional needed work. That's what makes this program so key. It drives a partnership between local entities and the state so that libraries can be more attractive, accessible, and up to date. Public libraries are active community spaces, and they get a lot of traffic. So there is always some place, some area that needs attention. And as Karen mentioned, right now across the state, numerous libraries have identified needs. Representative Murphy worked hard for funding this program so that everyone in the state could enjoy their library. The patrons, the customers, all of us have benefited from her efforts. The Minnesota Library Association supports the name change of this important program to honor a longtime library champion, Mary Murphy. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, do we have any questions? Representative Perez Vega.
I don't have a question, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you to everyone who's advocating. I didn't get the opportunity to serve with Mary Murphy, but I remember in my first year, she welcomed me as a guest here and said, go knock them out, Maria. And I said, okay, Maria. And her memory will live in on why we think it's so important to continue advocating for literacy and for all of our kids to love libraries as much as I do. Thank you.
Representative Scraba.
Very quick. I knew Mary, hung out with Mary. She was our bonding person for a while for the range, good person. But the library thing is huge, huge supporter of libraries here. Someday we'll have the Ely Library and Rachel here. When Rachel comes, she'll have to bring cookies, though. She does a really good job. When I was mayor, she did a great job. But I support your effort wholeheartedly. Libraries are the key to knowledge. Thank you.
Not seeing any questions. Closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to just present the bill and really appreciate the bipartisan support for libraries in general and also making this name change in honor of Chair Mary Murphy. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Lee renews this motion to re-refer House File 1090 to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The City of Arden Hills is requesting funding for construction and easement acquisition for a pedestrian and bicycle trail along Old Highway 10. This section of the highway is a major access point for students at Valentine Hills Elementary, Mounds View High School, and Bethel University. In fact, I have a couple of Mounds View High School students and a former grad here, and I think they can attest to what a safety need this is to have this sidewalk and this trail constructed. It is an area on, like I said, on a highway. There are a lot of students who are brand new drivers. It's a very dangerous stretch of road. There's also a manufactured home community in the area that this would provide access to, and then really the whole region, it will connect everything. It is the final segment of a trail that the city has been putting a lot of money into over the last several years. The city's expenditure budget is approximately $6.7 million. The ask here is $1.65, and I do have the City of Arden Hills Council Member Emily Russo here to testify.
Good morning. I'm Councilmember Emily Russo, also a parent of a recent Mounds View High School graduate.
So I'm here representing our students and community and requesting your consideration to support funding for a trail that would be a critical safety connection for approximately 7,500 elementary school, high school, and university students, as well as our local residents. Our city has less than 10,000 residents with a general fund expenditure budget of $6.7 million, and we do not retake a request for $1,650,000 lightly. Currently, our students traveling by foot or bicycle travel on the narrow dirt shoulder or the steep ditch on this 1.25 mile stretch of Old Highway 10, where there is no trail today. There is no pedestrian barrier on this 45 mile per hour road. Pedestrians and bikers travel next to vehicles awfully driven by their newly licensed peers. And our city has completed construction of a trail south of Lake Valentine Road to also support the student population, and it's been a highly successful project. The new trail would complete this connection, allowing for safe travels from County Highway 96 to Lake Valentine Road, and fills a gap in an active pedestrian network. And it would also link the existing North Metro Regional Trail system. So we have an engineering plan and specification design is complete. We have shovel-ready plans and are now pending funding, which would be locally matched by the City of Arden Hills at $1,786,000. Ramsey County has programmed $700,000 towards this trail connection, and the city has been awarded $1 million through the Metropolitan Council Safe Routes to School grant program. So we are doing everything that we possibly can to ensure a successful execution of the project despite the city's limited financial resources. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, council member. Seeing no questions, closing comments, Chair Mueller.
Thank you, and I'll just note too, there are a lot of students who are athletes that run along this road, and that's students from all the different schools. My kids were in cross country, and it is terrifying to see groups of kids running along this highway knowing there are a lot of newly licensed drivers driving by. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Frazier, House File 680. After that, we have Representative Kozlowski, House File 427, and then Representative Smith, House File 502. So can you make sure to get behind and be on deck? Welcome, Representative Frazier. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 680 is asking for an appropriation of $835,000. There's been a bit of a typo I saw in the legislation, but we'll get that cleared up for you. $835,000 is actually half of the total cost to create the prepares for New Hope City Village Golf Course, which is a regional asset. It's a par three golf course, and it plays a vital role in expanding the game of golf. New Hope Village serves over 550 participants from more than 50 cities as an affordable option for beginning golfers. The New Hope Golf Course plays a vital role in introducing new players to the sport, promoting outdoor activity, and fostering a lifelong love for golf. By maintaining its quality and affordability, the course continues to serve as an inclusive and welcoming space for golfers of all skill levels. Investing in these upgrades ensures that the course remains a well-maintained and accessible recreational space for the community. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to the City Manager for testimony.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Reese Berthoff. I'm the City Manager for New Hope. I'd like to share with you a story today. The Honorable Representative Frazier did a great job of underpinning the reasons why we're asking money for you today. But if you think of a golf course as an economic driver, that's what I'd like to talk to you about. Just down the street on Bass Lake Road is Bass Lake Crossing Apartments. It was the first stop on the tour when I was oriented to the city by the police chief. His words to me is, this is where we need to work. And I can assure you that that apartment complex, and I want to note that 50% of the units in New Hope for housing are multifamily dwellings, needs help. We were recently buoyed by the understanding that through a refinancing, that management company has $8.7 million to invest into their apartment complex, and it really needs it. My point is that if we don't collectively continue to invest in civic infrastructure, the other funds that will flow in that symbiotic relationship remain at risk. So we have a postage stamp of beauty in the center of New Hope in our golf course, and we're excited for your partnership to be able to continue that for four decades to come if we invest in it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier, for being here. Do you have plans to this is a par three that's come that you would propose. Are there ability to scale it to 18 or 9-hole course?
City Manager.
Thank you. So this, as I mentioned, is a postage stamp. It is absolutely landlocked, and it is the last undeveloped land other than parks in the city of New Hope. So, no, it will continue to serve that vital need of par three, introductory, and affordable golf for our regional area and multiple communities. You'll note in our backup material that we have over 50 communities represented in our membership at the golf course.
Okay.
Representative Carroll, last follow-up.
I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Quick closing comments.
It's a regional asset. As I said, we serve over 50 cities, and we're trying to make sure that we, first of all, keep this spectacular, but also keep it affordable for folks.
Thank you. Next up, House File 427, Representative Kozlowski. Welcome, Representative. Please proceed.
All right. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity to hear House File 427, which is funding for our new air traffic control tower at the Duluth International Airport. This project was included in the last tour, having served on bonding in the northeast leg. So many of you had your eyes on it firsthand. Usually, you know, this is the third oldest tower in the country and a top regional priority. The airport serves not only northeastern Minnesota, but the broader upper Midwest, supporting commerce, emergency services, tourism, as well as our national military operations and defense, and is the second busiest airport in Minnesota. So this is really significant because it would unlock federal dollars that are on the table and maximize our return with state dollars while making sure that we're investing in the resilience of our long-term infrastructure. So I'd like to turn it over to Tom Werner from the Duluth International Airport to talk more about on the scope and significance and the impact on Minnesota and our region.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chairs Lee and Franzen and members of the Capital Investment Committee for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Tom Werner, Executive Director of the Duluth Airport Authority. I'd also like to thank Representatives Kozlowski, Johnson, Scraba, and Zalesnikar for their leadership and advocacy on behalf of this important bipartisan initiative. The aviation cluster centered around the Duluth International Airport contributes $1.4 billion in annual economic impact and supports over 4,000 jobs. DLH is home to Cirrus Aircraft, the Minnesota Air National Guard's 148th Fighter Wing, Monaco Air, Lake Spear College's Center for Advanced Aviation, and passenger service providers such as Delta, United, and Minnesota's own Sun Country Airlines, totaling 87,000 total annual operations. This unique mix of fast-moving military jets, research and development flights, slow-moving recreational aircraft, helicopters, and commercial air service creates a complex airspace where air traffic controllers quarterback movement and are vital to aviation safety. In addition, Duluth's air traffic controllers assist aircraft who come and go safely from numerous airports throughout northeast Minnesota. This project is important to safe air commerce throughout the region. The Duluth International Airport's 70-year-old air traffic control tower has the distinction of being the third oldest facility in the country. Historically, there has not been a federal program to fund replacement of locally owned air traffic control towers. That changed when the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act established a competitive grant program to fund the replacement of locally owned air traffic facilities. This $5 billion program provides a five-year window to secure funding that will pay for 95% of eligible costs for a new $72 million air traffic control tower at DLH. We are asking the state legislature to help us leverage a considerable federal investment by providing $14 million in funding. The state's investment will fund federally ineligible portions of the project and help secure funding that would not otherwise come to Minnesota. The time is now. We are poised to support the next generation of air commerce in our region. A state-of-the-art air traffic control facility will ensure DLH will support safe air travel for decades to come. Thank you for considering our project and your work on behalf of the residents of our state.
Thank you, Director. Representative Scraba.
I just want to, as a member of the delegation on the Iron Range, a lot of our people, we have International Falls, Hibbing, and Duluth. And Duluth is by far the largest. And the mix, we have a company, Cirrus, that uses it all the time. We have a lot of, it's an important airport, and I'd hate to see us not take advantage of the federal dollars that are there. And if you look at the letters of support, when you get the city of Duluth and St. Louis County agreeing on one thing really strong, that's a good thing for our area. So I really appreciate you guys going to bat for everyone. Thank you. And I'd support this wholeheartedly.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Members in the Representative Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Mr. Werner, just to clarify for me, looking at the handout that you have, $72 million total cost. We've got $54.7 million federal funding request and Can you just walk me through what the different pots of money are that are contributing to this, just for my understanding, please?
Sure. Director Werner.
Chair Lee and Representative. So the different pots of money, we've got the total federal request at 50.7 million. We actually have 16 of that already committed. Our next grant request with the federal government will be 38 million this summer. The 14 million from the state is for federally ineligible portions of the facility. We have taken advantage of the MnDOT matching program to the tune of 3.3 million. We've already invested $3 million in the project in required studies and other zoning requirements to get us to this point, as well as the project being fully designed. We are shovel ready at this time. And so that is that's the funding breakdown.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Kozlowski for bringing this. I have an airport in my district, too, and I just have a quick question. Are there any implementations of having a direct flight to Puerto Rico from the Duluth Airport?
Representative Kozlowski, quick closing comments as you answer.
Yes, that'll be top of the list, working hard on that, getting to Puerto Rico. No, this is really important, as you heard, the unique nature of the ownership. The service across the region is really important for people, but businesses, military operations, and so much more. And so time is of the essence for safety and ensuring that this is here for the future. So we appreciate your support and consideration.
Thank you. Next up, we have House File 203, Representative Feist, and then after that will be Chair Wolgamott, House File 2110, and then after that will be Representative Murphy, House File 229. Welcome, Representative Feist. Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, committee, for hearing House File 203. This bill requests partnership between the state of Minnesota and the city of Columbia Heights in replacing their rapidly deteriorating municipal service center. This funding would be for the pre-design, design, and construction of a public works facility and expanded recycling area and related infrastructure. I've toured this facility, and Chair Lee has toured it. The ground is literally deteriorating beneath your feet. It's very alarming, and the city has been really good stewards of this building and worked hard to maintain it over the decades, but it is desperately in need of this update. And the city of Columbia Heights understands that they need to provide a local match, and they are prepared to do so. We understand that phasing may be required, and so I just want to confirm that this can be a phased project. And with that, I will turn it over to my amazing local leaders to share more detail.
So before I turn it over to the mayor and members, there is an amendment just for reference, deleting the number from 12 to 14. Welcome, whoever wants to go first. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello. Excuse me, was that a question?
No, just reference for members. Yep.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Lee, and to all the representatives for hearing our bill for House File 203 today. I am Amada Marquez-Simula. I'm the mayor of Columbia Heights and appreciate this opportunity to testify. I want to begin by thanking Representative Feist for carrying this bill and being such a strong advocate for our city. We are truly grateful for her work. Today, I am testifying to ask you to consider assisting the city of Columbia Heights with replacing its municipal service center. This facility is in poor condition and needs replacement quickly. I want to provide you with a bit of context regarding this request. Our current public works facility was built in 1970, and the city of Columbia Heights has undertaken extensive rehabilitation projects to extend its life, but the primary building is now at a point where the major repair projects are no longer viable. Additionally, the building does not meet current ADA standards and has contamination on the site. We also want you to know we are fiscally responsible and repeatedly use local resources rather than coming to the state to request assistance for other public buildings. The handout you received from the City of Columbia Heights notes that as of 2021, our median household income was 26% lower than the rest of the metropolitan area. And over the last 10 years, we have increased property taxes on our residents by an average of 8.2% each year to support just essential city services. And finally, we understand you are grappling with a difficult budget picture. We want you to know we are prepared to provide a local contribution, and we can phase the project if you are unable to provide an entire request. So in closing, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Feist, and committee members for your time today. I, along with our city manager, Aaron Chirpik, are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mayor. Seeing no question, quick closing comments, Representative Feist.
Thank you so much for hearing this bill. This is really critical funding for a local community that really needs it, and it will be put to very good use. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up, Chair Wolgamott, House File 2110. Welcome, Chair. Please proceed.
Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, and members of the Capital Investment Committee, it is great to be back with you this morning to present House File 2110, which is a request for $5 million in capital funds to support the 322nd Street Improvement Project. This will fund critical safety and infrastructure needs due to increased traffic and ongoing development along a key corridor in Northwest St. Cloud. There'll be an installation of wider shoulders to improve safety for vehicles, cyclists, and pedestrians, an addition of street lighting to enhance visibility and reduce accidents, particularly at night, as well as implementation of other safety features such as improved signage and traffic control measures. Mr. Chair, we do have an amendment, and I also have with me to testify on this bill Stearns County Commissioner Terrell Clark.
Chair Wolgamott, can you explain briefly the amendment for reference?
Yes, there was a drafting error where it referenced the general fund, and this amendment just makes it applicable to general obligation bonds. I'll also note for members that although the request here says $3.1 million, I've heard from the jurisdictions that I've been working with on this legislation, and that request will be has been changed to $5 million.
Thank you. And then we have Commissioner Clark testifying remotely. Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Terrell Clark, as Chair Wolgamott said, Stearns County Commissioner, District 1. Thank you and the members for having us today. This is an important regional project. This span of road is in St. Cloud and two townships. There are huge safety issues. As a matter of fact, we probably hear about this road more than any other road in all of Stearns County, including our county engineer. So this project coming in front of you would help with the coordination of multiple jurisdictions and do the kinds of safety upgrades that are needed. Right now, the road has next to no shoulder. It's dark. It is unsafe, and it's a fast-growing area of our region. It helps connect communities, and these improvements will help make sure it's safer. On their own, it just won't get done otherwise because two townships are involved, as well as one or two cities, and it's connected by the county. So we're hoping that you will approve this project and make a difference for the safety of the region.
Thank you, Commissioner. Seeing no questions, closing comments, Chair Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to present House File 2110. I urge your support for this key project that will reduce accidents, improve traffic flow, and enhance public safety in central Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Murphy, House File 229, and after that, we'll go with Representative Smith, House File 502. Welcome, Representative Murphy. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and thank you, Committee, for hearing House File 229. House File 229 seeks support for a youth transitional facility in Otter Tail County. Just to give you a little bit of background on the facility, it's in Otter Tail County. It's a youth leadership center. It's a 12-unit transitional residential facility in Perham designed for youth facing substance abuse disorders, mental health challenges, and other barriers to stability. It's located walking distance from education programs and also from nearby employers. In Perham, we've had the example of another similar situation where you work for adults, and it's worked out extremely well. And with the community in Perham, especially with the workforce, it's been extremely beneficial. So this is a program that's very similar to that. Over 1,000 job openings in Otter Tail County, many transition age youth struggle to secure employment due to housing instability, mental health issues, and a lack of skills. Providing safe, stable housing for youth aged 15 to 21 is the goal. Connecting youth with education, training for jobs, and life skill programs through the community partners. Reducing barriers to employment, school attendance, and essential support services needed for long-term success. This is just not a shelter. It's helping to break some of the ties between poverty, reducing justice system involvement, and building a stronger workforce. Youth returning home after treatment often lack stable support systems, causing them to fall back into old patterns. Youth aging out of foster care often struggle with housing, employment, and navigating adult responsibilities without guidance. This center will fill the gap in offering structured support in a stable, community-based structure. Keeping youth in our community, many youth needing this service are forced to relocate hours away, disconnecting them from family, schools, and trusted members. This project ensures that youth can stay in Otter Tail County, maintaining that the critical relationships and building stabilities in a familiar surrounding. This is not just an Otter Tail issue, a county issue. Major employers are seeking to grow their workforce. Educational institutions are committed to youth success. And law enforcement and community leaders who see the potential for crime prevention and public safety improvements are also on board. With that, I have a testifier from Otter Tail County. Nick Leonard is the Deputy Administrator for Otter Tail County, and I'd like to have him say a few words.
Welcome, please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Nick Leonard. Thanks for having me this morning. As Representative said, I'm the Deputy Administrator for Otter Tail County. I support a team that we refer to as Economic Growth and Community Investment. Prior to working for the county, I was a psychologist. I spent most of my career working with children, adolescents, and families. And so it is a real honor today to be talking about this project that won't only transform lives, but will strengthen economic development by expanding workforce participation, filling critical job vacancies, and fostering a more self-sufficient, resilient community. The representative did a nice job telling you about the project. One thing I really want to stress, and because I think for us this is most important, certainly we want to get youth engaged not only in workforce but in their educational opportunities, but what's really, really important for us is the importance of keeping them in the region. And so what happens is these young people end up getting, as the representative said, sent hours away from their communities. Sometimes they might only have one significant positive influence in their life. And what happens is they get disconnected from that. It might be a mentor, it may be an employer, maybe somebody at the school. And so the real strength of this, not only is the community support for the project, but the connection of keeping them in their local community where they have that positive influence. With that, I'll certainly stand for any questions.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, close the comments. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a good next step for youth. Perham is a leader in working community solutions, and this is really about coming up with a community solution for these kids. Transitioning help has been very effective. Help your youth and our communities. Thank you for considering House File 229.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Smith, House File 502. After that, we will go to Representative Curran, House File 206, and then Chair Fiber, House File 207. So please make your way to the back of the dais so that we can keep the bills going. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franzen, and members of the committee for the opportunity to present House File 502 to you today. House File 502 appropriates funding to Olmsted County to construct and equip a regional materials recovery facility, which has the very fun nickname of a MRF. At the outset, I want to stress that right now there is currently no regional MRF in southeastern Minnesota. In the entire region of the southeastern part of our state, there is no MRF, and Olmsted County is trying to fill that gap and help our communities all throughout that state. That's why you will find in your packet not just support from Olmsted County, but also Steele County, Dodge Counties, and other surrounding business communities. The county has received funding for this in the past in 2023, and we are extremely grateful for that funding. But cost increases, as well as seeing that the need has increased in our region, has brought the county back here to ask for additional resources to expand that project and continually add more support for our region. In short, the primary objective of any MRF is to extend the useful life of waste materials and convert them from a liability to an asset. We appreciate the opportunity to bring this bill before you today and hope you'll support our efforts in southeastern Minnesota to provide local recycling opportunities and enhance environmental stewardship in our region, which I'll remind you is a karst region, which means we don't have landfills in that area for the safety in our groundwater. I have with me Olmsted County Commissioner David Senjum, who's on Zoom today, and I'll pass it to him to fill in some of the gaps from my testimony.
Welcome, Commissioner. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, members. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Certainly appreciate Representative Smith and also Representatives Liebling and Hicks for co-sponsoring this bill. It's an important bill. Olmsted County has for a long time been a leader, certainly with respect to solid waste management, and this bill in particular takes us, I believe, to another level of excellence with respect to that that challenge that we have. Thank you so much for the $10 million in 2023. Regretfully, as we got into further cost analysis on this for MMB last fall, that cost had gone up considerably. And so we're here today to ask for an additional $19 million to add to that $10 million. That'll get us to nearly 30 on what is basically a $58 million project. We absolutely expect to do our share in terms of the 50-50 match. With respect to the reasons, again, recycling is very important. We want to be regional, and we certainly want to be at the threshold of excellence with respect to how we handle our waste here in Olmsted County. And frankly, I think we want to be an example for others to follow relative to the work that we do. So, again, we're here today to ask for your kind consideration of our request and certainly stand for any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Commissioner. Seeing no, Representative Franzen, Chair Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, so it's not very often we get letters of opposition to bills. You happen to be the lucky one. So there's a concern from the National Waste and Recycling Association that the project did not undergo the review process in Minnesota Statute 115A.51A6 that requires the project proposer to analyze the project's impacts on existing private solid waste facilities. Representative Smith, is that true? And just curious why Olmsted County, if true, would bypass the review process?
Representative Smith or Commissioner Sindrum?
I can take this one, Chair. Thank you for the question, Chair Franzen, because I did want to address that letter that we received this morning about this. First off, to the actual specific statute you mentioned, as far as I understand, that is an MPCA requirement that the county will do in the applications for the project moving forward, but it's not required for a capital investment request. The short answer is Olmsted County hasn't done it yet, but we are going to do it because it's part of the process to get this off the ground. Secondly, I also would ask members to read that letter. And essentially what it says is that greater Minnesotans, specifically in my region, southeastern Minnesota, should bring their recycling to the cities and have it done there by private companies who own it there. And as a proud resident of greater Minnesota, I don't think that's a precedent that this committee would want to set. And I'd also say it goes against the spirit of what we're trying to do in our county, which is if we're trying to be the best stewards of our resources. So to put all of our recycling into trucks, use all of that fuel to ship it up here to the Twin Cities to another facility would go against the whole point of having our recycling center, which is what we'd like to do. And again, for the entire region, not just for Olmsted.
Chair Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Smith, I mean, I don't disagree with your comments. My concern is, as one of the chairs of this committee, is making sure that we have the dollars to spend where they are needed. As you know, we have all over the state, water infrastructure issues, crumbling roads, those type of things. So, you know, as long as we are not duplicating services that maybe could be done elsewhere, and I guess we'll learn more as this goes through the process. Thank you.
Quick closing comment, Representative Smith.
Thank you for the opportunity. Just to reiterate, thanks, Chair Franzen, for that question. And we don't currently have a MRF in southeastern Minnesota, and we need one. So thank you for listening to our request, and appreciate the time.
Next up, Representative Curran, House File 206. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, chairs and members, for hearing this bill today. We're here to ask for your help completing a much-needed trail segment in the city of Venice Heights, which will link multiple regional trails and safely connect Minnesotans to our transportation network. The road as it exists is heavily relied upon by bikers and pedestrians due to its location, but it's highly dangerous without adequate space as the road curves through lakes, parks, and neighborhoods between very busy intersections. From here, I'll turn it over to Mayor Mike of Vadnais Heights to testify to the bill, and we do have our city's Public Works Director with us if we have questions.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself. Proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Thank you to Representative Curran for helping bring this important issue before you. My name is Mike Kratchmer. I'm the mayor of Vadnais Heights, and I'm here on behalf of the city to request your support for $6 million bonding dollars for the Vadnais Boulevard Trail, a vital project that will improve safety, connectivity, and quality of life for our community. In partnership with Ramsey County, this project will construct a 2.25-mile multi-use trail along the southern edge of Vadnais Lake, completing a key missing link in our regional trail network. Today, pedestrians and cyclists traveling along Vadnais Boulevard face safety risks, sharing space with vehicle traffic. This trail will include separated pathways and traffic calming features to ensure safer travel for everyone. Beyond safety, this project strengthens connections. It links neighborhoods, schools, parks, and businesses to regional trails and transit corridors, supporting mobility, access, and local economic growth. It also encourages outdoor recreation and promotes community health. Additionally, the trail is designed with environmental enhancements, including stormwater management systems to protect water quality and preserve the natural beauty of Vadnais Lake, the drinking water source for much of the Eastern Metro. We recognize the size of this investment, and the project can be phased to match available funding, allowing us to deliver portions of the trail while working toward the full vision. This is a community-supported project that will have long-term regional benefits. We respectfully ask for your partnership to help move it forward. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mayor. Seeing no questions, quick closing comments, Representative Curran.
Thank you, chairs and members, for your time and consideration of the bill. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Next up, we have Chair Freiberg, House File 207, and then after that, Representative Hill, House File 216, and then Chair Cagle, House File 222. Members, please make your way up behind the dais so that we can keep this going. And for the members, just a reminder to keep your remarks short so that we can hear from your testifiers. Chair Freiberg, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Franson, members of the committee. The City of Golden Valley is requesting $6.3 million in bonding to build a new East Fire Station to better serve the Golden Valley community as well as the wider region. The East Fire Station will replace Golden Valley's current fire stations 2 and 3, which are more than 45 years old. They're not appropriately located to provide the best response throughout the community, and they're on parcels of land that are too small to accommodate current needs and which cannot accommodate modern fire operations. This is a request for phase two of the project. In 2023, Golden Valley received $3.127 million of bonding and for site acquisition costs, and this request would go towards construction costs, with the City of Golden Valley covering approximately $9.5 million in costs. I'm joined by Golden Valley Fire Chief Bethany Brunsell, who will share more information about this project.
Welcome, Chief. Please identify yourself. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair France and Chair Lee and committee members for your time today. My name is Bethany Brunsell. I'm the fire chief for the Golden Valley Fire Department. Unlike many cities, we are not looking to add more fire stations to our city, but are actually looking to right-size our department and go from three stations down to two. We need a new station not just for cosmetic or comfort reasons, but for safety purposes. None of Golden Valley's current fire stations meet current best practices for cancer prevention or safety standards. In just the last few years, we've had at least four members of our department who've been diagnosed with cancer. Fiscally, we believe it makes more sense for the state to support building new stations that incorporate cancer prevention measures than it does to keep paying for a line of duty benefits for firefighters who are diagnosed with cancer or potentially even die as a result of their cancer. 40 years ago, when these stations were built, they were not designed for women or firefighters like me. Currently, about 19% of our department are women, but we do not have restrooms, locker rooms, or showers that accommodate women appropriately. As you can see in the handout you should have received, in our current stations, firefighters have to back fire trucks into the station through very narrow doors that happen to be right next to where firefighters store their gear. This poses significant risk of injuries and damage to people, to apparatus, and to our buildings. As we recognize the increasing challenges of a paid on-call fire department, we've began the transition to staffing a station with a duty crew. Right now, we staff a station 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. However, we cannot staff a station overnight without new stations that have bunk rooms. We also believe that this new station will be a regional benefit. As an example, Theodore Worth Park, which happens to be a Minneapolis park, but is located within the city of Golden Valley, is host to a wide number of activities, including skiing, mountain biking, golfing, and all of those events, which some of which draw people from all over the world to attend. If there's a medical or fire emergency, it is the Golden Valley Fire Department who is the primary responder for those events. We appreciate your consideration for this bill, which will help us build a new fire station to protect our first responders and provide better service to our local and regional community.
Thank you, Chief. Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Representative Freiberg, for bringing this bill. We went through the very same thing in Plymouth in terms of redoing things, and I learned all about, you know, off-gassing and all that thing and the importance of safety for our firefighters. So thank you and good luck.
Chair Freiberg, quick closing comments.
This is an important resource in our community, and I appreciate the committee's time for considering it. So thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Hill, House File 216. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Chair Franson, members. We're pleased to be here today on behalf of the City of Stillwater. We are seeking an appropriation to repair our Myrtle Street Hill. Myrtle Street is the main artery that leads to our historic downtown. And we are blessed with having a historic downtown, but what that means is we have aging infrastructure. And so I'm pleased to be joined here today by Mayor Ted Kozlowski and City Manager Joe Coleman, who are going to share more about this, again, important artery that serves more than 8,500 vehicles a day.
So, Representative Hill, before the mayor proceed, I see you have an amendment for reference. Can you explain that real quickly?
Yeah, I'd like to move the A25. The cost of this project, which was included 2 years ago during the last biennium with the House bill, has gone up due to inflation. And so if we could move the A25 to get the bill up to date.
Thank you, Representative Hill. We don't need to move the bill, but it's good for us to reference it, so thank you. Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franson, and committee members. I'm Ted Kozlowski, the mayor of the City of Stillwater. Again, appreciate this opportunity to be here and to testify about our request for a partnership with the state on Myrtle Street. Myrtle Street's a very busy street. It's a very steep street in Stillwater, and the cost of this project is largely due to the grade and the fact that it gets so much volume. And it's not just obviously local traffic, it's all of the people that are coming to visit our beautiful downtown, coming to bring their kids to hockey, do all those things. It's a very, very busy street, and it's very steep. So the reconstruction costs for this are really extraordinary relative to anything else we do. We're a small city of under 20,000 residents. We do a really good job of taking care of our streets and roads, but this is kind of over the top. It requires a full reconstruction. As some of you know from visiting our community, we serve hundreds of thousands of visitors every year. This is our main entrance. It's also very tough for our public safety folks. It's largely what our fire department and police department and EMS use to get to events and incidences downtown. So whether it's public safety or it's visitors coming for Lumberjack Days, Winterfest, or just coming to check out our bars, restaurants, and breweries, we want our roads to be safe and to work for everyone, for our residents and for our businesses. We're respectfully asking for $2 million to help us with the Myrtle Street reconstruction. It's again serves as the main artery. And I just want to thank Chair Lee for bringing the Capital Investment Committee to Stillwater to learn about the problem we face. I think a few of you have probably been down Myrtle Street. It's the big steep one that dog legs to the left as you're going downtown. And we really hope the committee can find a way to help us this year and appreciate the willingness to partner with us. So thank you for your time and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mayor. So you know, question, quick close of comments, Representative Hill.
Yes, once again, we thank you for the opportunity to share this need. And as a kid, riding my bike down to the river to go fishing it was always much nicer to go down Myrtle Street than up it. And for those who have been there, you would understand why. And we, again, humbly ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Chair Cagle, House File 222, and then Representative Hewitt, House File 227, and then Representative Mamani Hiltzley, House File 971. Chair Cagle, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 222 is a bill for the Hilltop Center for what it would be a tornado shelter, but also with Hilltop being such a small community, only 16 blocks wide and 900 residents, with 263 of the town's residents living in mobile homes across four trailer parks. This is a vital need for the Hilltop community. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier.
Welcome. Please identify yourself. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Ruth Nelson. I'm the city clerk for the city of Hilltop. Small correction. Hilltop is small, modest. We're located in the southern part of Anoka County. 971 residents total, but two-thirds of those folks live in manufactured housing. So a little step up from 200-something. We're here asking for support to help build a new multi-purpose building. It will house a small office for myself and a community meeting room, but the prime driver for looking at the project in the first place is to increase storm shelter capacity. Right now, the folks who live in manufactured housing have no safe place to go. There is a basement in the existing city hall. It's not storm rated, it's just a basement. We can cram just short of 200 people in there during bad weather. It's not fun, it's not pleasant. 200 is a shoulder to shoulder to shoulder to shoulder laps and backs carrying thing. The new building doubles the capacity of, or triples the capacity of the shelter. There will be one ground above, or one story above ground, one below, but once you enter the front doors, the entire building is tornado rated, so we can hold up to 700 people. All of those folks live within a quarter mile of the proposed new building. It's a critical public safety need for a very modest, low-income community. Our tax base is just under $650,000 a year. Our total budget is just over $1 million, so we really need your help in partnering to fund the project. We are seeking some private funds. We've secured about $75,000 so far. The city has invested in all of the design and planning. The site and the plans are ready to go. We're shovel ready, just waiting to, hoping you can help us fill the gap in funding. We have received some federal funding as well, but we're significantly short of what we need to build the project. The city has some reserves we will dip into. We have a small ability to borrow some. We can bring about $1 million to the table ourselves. Total cost for the project is just over $4.5 million. We're asking for $2,273,000 from the state.
Thank you, City Administrator. Seeing no questions, closing comments. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members. This is just a really vital need for this very small community in my district. I want to thank Ruth, and Mayor Higgins is here as well. Or is it Wiggins? Wiggins. I'm getting a phone call at the same time here. And so just want to make sure that, you know, this is something that our community really needs. And thank you for considering it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next up, Representative Hewitt, House File 227. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we're back here again. I don't think there's a session I've been elected to that I haven't presented this bill. So I'm going to turn it right over to the testifier, and then I'll close.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Trewartha. I am the Director of Customized Training and Continuing Education at Dakota County Technical College and Inverhills Community College. We have a driving track, a training facility that is used really as much larger than just an asset for the school. Public safety, in fact, just today, the Apple Valley Police Department, Cottage Grove, White Bear Lake, Woodbury, Scott County, Edina, Chaska, and Cannon Falls are all on the track doing defensive driving technique training. Again, this request is larger than something that would simply be an addition to the school. The last time that any repairs have really been done of any magnitude was 1995. In your package, I think you have some pictures to show what disrepair the track is in. We put roughly $50,000 to $80,000 a year in emergency repairs. We do have a commitment from, or an actual appropriation from the federal government of $1.125 million. The school is ready to add to that, and our request is for $825,000 to actually make sure that we can do all of the necessary repaving and repair to the track. Again, I really believe that the hundreds of police departments and fire departments, ambulance, snowplow, public works, in addition to the community and the events that they have, really do make this much larger than simply a request from the college. So if anybody has any questions, I would certainly be willing to answer those, but we'll keep it short and sweet.
Thank you, Director. Seeing no questions, quick close of comments, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and thank you, committee, for listening to this and considering it in your bill. This track is extremely important. Last year in Minneapolis alone, we had an officer involved in a fatal at an intersection. That's what they teach here, and they keep it off the streets. New drivers, new operators learn here all the time. I really encourage you to ask even your local departments what they're doing, because they're all required to have a driving course almost every 2 years. So thank you, Chair Lee, for listening to it, and hopefully you can consider it.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Next up, we have Representative Momoyani Hiltzley. Apologize if I got your last name wrong. And then after that, we got Representative Hussein, House File 13-07, and then Representative Tafke, House File 1274. Please.
Thank you so much, Chair Lee. Thank you so much for the members of this committee for the opportunity to dedicate and strengthen the communities across Minnesota. I'm proud to author House File 975, which seeks $9.5 million in state funding for the Northwest Regional Athletic Facility in my city of Brooklyn Park. For over 40 years, this facility has welcomed over more than 350,000 annual visitors, serving as a vital gathering place for youths, families, and seniors. But today, the aging infrastructure and limited space are holding our community back, especially as our population grows more and more diverse and our needs are and our need for safe, accessible, and recreational space space increases. This investment will provide four things. One, a multi-court gymnasium to meet the decades of unmet needs. And then secondly, ADA-compliant entrances to ensure accessibility for all of our members. And then flexible event space for the community and cultural gatherings. And lastly, improved parking and outdoor space for safe and inclusive use. This isn't just about a building. It's about creating a space where generations of youths will find mentorship, families will connect, and our diverse communities will thrive. It's about investing in safety, belonging, and opportunity for every resident of the Northwestern Metro, not just Brooklyn Park, to find a space to connect and fellowship. I urge you to support this bill. I'll give my testifier, my mayor, a chance to provide input on the critical need for this infrastructure.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. So, Hollis Winston, Mayor of the wonderful city of Brooklyn Park. I'd like to thank you, Chair Lee, and the committee for hearing me once again. So thank you for allowing us the time. Just very quickly about the city of Brooklyn Park, we are now the fifth or sixth largest. We are, again, 64% people of color. We have a very modest tax base. So just quickly, if we benchmark ourselves versus a city that's only a little bit larger than us, Bloomington. They have $5.5 billion in commercial property values. We have $2 billion. That's a $3.5 billion gap. We have to pass that along to already strapped residents in the form of property taxes, and it affects our ability to avoid some of these things. So what we have taken increasingly is a regional approach to grow ourselves out of this. I think you have heard us come before you around the biotech district. That is one way we want to grow that tax base and that tax revenue. We have also put some skin in the game in terms of building out Zanewood. It's a youth facility that is off Zane. It's in an area that has had some struggles. That is primarily financed with dollars from Brooklyn Park, a little bit of funding from Hennepin County, and then some congressional. But then also the Community Activity Center, which we're talking about now, that is also another way that we're going to begin to grow that tax base and that regional approach. So we're requesting $9.5 million for the Northwest Metro Regional Athletics Facility to create multi-court gymnasiums in Brooklyn Park. And this new facility will really serve as a hub for tournaments for participants from around the Midwest, driving tourism and economic impact. Again, we're going to grow ourselves out of this issue. There is a significant shortage of access to court space in the Northwest Metro. This project would create a multi-court gymnasium space that would host three basketball courts or three volleyball courts. The creation of this multi-court facility will create access for existing basketball, volleyball, and pickleball programs, but also allow for the expansion of those programs that have been inhibited by the lack of available space. Other sports like futsal, y'all can look that up. It's F-U-T-S-A-L, but it's popular in Brooklyn Park, and it's growing. Wrestling and gymnastics will also have access to space for events and tournaments. And to be upfront, in 2023, an appropriation for $5 million was intended to create court space through conversion of one ice arena to a multi-court gym. But after considerable input from ice sports users around the region, it was determined that the approach that best serves all sports is to create a multi-court gymnasium and maintain the current ice arena operations. So very quickly, when I say that Brooklyn Park is 64% people of color, well, it may be 64% people of color. It is 100% diverse. So when we talk about a city as diverse as Brooklyn Park, we also have to honor many of the sports and the heritage that came before some of the new populations that are there. And that is one of the things that we are working together as a community to say, how do we have something for everyone? Folks who are new here, also folks who are legacy in terms of building out this city. Due to its convenient location, the existing facility fills the additional need for ice time for organizations throughout the Northwest Metro, including Wayzata, Champlin Park, Osseo, Maple Grove, Ray Rogers, and many others. The addition of this multi-court gymnasium would allow this expanded facility to fill a similar need for court sports organizations from the area while continuing to support ice sports. This new facility could also serve as an additional event support space for community and cultural events that will also draw people from around the region, so Liberian Independence Day, Igbo Fest, and other organizations. So just very quickly to summarize, it meets a number of needs. It helps us with that revenue and that tax base, but it's also youth. The investment in this space is an investment in our youth. It is well known that youth that are engaged in activities and have outlets for youthful energy are less likely to be involved in juvenile crime. And then also that regional approach. I think people heard about the plane crash that happened in Brooklyn Park. We had folks from Plymouth. We had folks from Osseo, Fridley. Those fire departments came and assisted us in a time of need. They did that because we have built out a regional reputation within our area. So we have supported many, and those were folks turning around and supporting us. Around this, we have also received letters of support from Brooklyn Park Athletic Association, Northwest Minneapolis Tourism, Three Rivers Figure Skating Club, Champlin Park Youth Hockey, Osseo Maple Grove Youth Hockey, and the Minnesota Chill Foundation. So again, thank you for hearing us out.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Carroll, quick.
Very quickly. Thank you, Mayor. Good to see you again. I have got a compromise for you. Instead of doing this in Brooklyn Park, join with Plymouth to get a third gym in our community center. It'll save money. It'll serve everyone. It's a regional asset. Thank you.
Representative Yan, I apologize. Quick closing comments.
Absolutely. Momanyi Hiltzley. Thank you so much, Representative. We'll talk on the side about that. But closing comments. This is, again, it's not just one city. It's this multi Northwestern regional asset that will bring in and resources that we need. And so I ask you guys to please consider this bill and put it on top of the pile as you consider your bills. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Mamanyi Hiltzley. Next up, House File 1307, Representative Hussein. And then Representative Tapke, can I have you behind the dais? Please proceed, Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Charlie, and committee members. I am here to present a critical investment for the for JK Movement Jimmy Lee Recreation Center, which will provide first a cultural responsive recreation center in the state of Minnesota. JK Movement, as you know, they serve our young youth in St. Paul. JK Movement is already making a difference by serving over 1,400 youth annually with mentorship, leadership, development, and economic support. This center will expand and that impact to provide a safe space for healing and grow for opportunity for our young generations. And as you know that, this rec center, I have a history as a youth. I used to play basketball and exercise and activities. I didn't have no opportunity for me to go anywhere else because this is a cheap place. It's open for the community and underserved. So it's not too far away from me. It's right next to Central High School. And a lot of kids are benefiting for this program. And that's the reason that I brought this bill is forward, is to invest our young generations. And I do have a testifier today that I would like to turn over.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes. Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Johnny Allen, Jr., the Executive Director and founder of the JK Movement. We've been in partnership with the City of St. Paul and operating out of the Jimmy Lee Recreation Center for over 5 years. As a Black-founded, Black-led grassroots organization, we provide healing-centered engagement and culturally responsive support for all youth, but particularly Black and BIPOC between 10 and 24 throughout Rondo and the surrounding Twin Cities metro area. At the JK Movement, we do more than mentor. We show up. We hold youth accountable. We challenge them. We uplift them. And we help them believe in themselves. This is just not our work. This is our calling. I would like to share a bit of one of our participants whose name is Troy. He's not here presently. He's actually at college right now. So, quote and unquote, all my life I was told I was a problem, that I didn't belong anywhere. This is what Troy believed, because this is what he has been told. But at the Jimmy Lee Recreation Center, powered by the JK Movement, Troy was given something that he hadn't had before, a place of a safe haven location, a place to dream, and also to be seen. He found mentorship, he found belonging, and he was exposed to STEM and career possibilities that gave him a passion and a spark. Today, Troy is a student at St. Paul College studying computer editing or computer coding. Troy is not an exception. He's proof of what's possible when we create the right environment. Investing in our youth is investing in Minnesota's future. The young people served by the JK Movement are future leaders, workers, and innovators of our state. Safe, supportive space prevents crime and saves lives. A safer Jimmy Lee Recreation Center helps prevent trauma before it starts, reducing long-term public safety and justice system costs. Bridging the digital divide and technical equity. A tech-forward center ensures young people like Troy can access the digital tools and education that drives today's economy. A launch pad for career pathways and workforce development. The JK Movement Career Pathway Corridor trains youth in high-demand industries, pairing hands-on experience with mentorship. Proven impact, ready for scale. The JK Movement is already delivering measurable outcomes with limited space and resources. A state-supported investment would scale a proven model, building on existing city, school, and nonprofit partnership. We launched our fundraising campaign, Reunite, Renew, and Reimagine Rally back in 2023 in support of reclaiming Jimmy Lee Recreation Center as a vibrant community center and resource. This is a $12.25 million project, and we're asking for $5.7 million from the state. We cannot afford to leave the brilliance of our babies on the streets. We must build an updated, safe place that honors their worth, their talents, and their futures. Our vision is to make Jimmy Lee Recreation Center a cutting-edge, culturally responsive healing hub, a trusted community resource where youth, their families, and allies can dream, believe in their potential, and turn their skills into self-sustaining futures rooted in opportunity, care, and impact. We are here to build something transformative, and I invite you all to join us. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Director. Closing comments, Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Chair, for giving us the opportunity. This project is backed by the public-private partnerships in City of St. Paul, Ramsey County, and many other investors. This is a great opportunity for us to develop and give more opportunity for our young generations. As I share, Chair, is this is a place for me in my heart that I spend a lot of time. Sometimes not even playing basketball, but just hanging in there or getting help for, you know, some of the homeworks. This is an hub for the Rondo in the heart of the community. So I would love you to support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. Next up, we have two Representative Tapke bill, and then Chair Fisher has two bill, and then Representative Green. Members, I would like to encourage you again to keep your remarks short so that your testifiers have time to proceed. We are running a little bit behind schedule. Welcome, Representative Tapke. Please proceed. House Files 1274.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, with House File 1274. This is a project that we have been working on, and can I have the page?
Representative Tapke, I understand that you have an amendment for reference. Can you explain that too?
Yes, the bill was written as cash, and it needs to be GO bonds, and so that's what that does for $4 million.
Got it. Thank you. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. So this project is in Shakopee, and this is a statewide regional impact project for entrepreneurs and for small businesses to help grow small businesses called the Innovation Hub. And we have a group in Shakopee called the Foundry, which does an incredible job of incubating and growing new businesses in our community and across the state. And so I have Corey Meyer, who is here, to help explain how this project would be used. It's a facility that will help for education and implementation of new businesses.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, Chair Franz, and the committee members. Thanks for your time. My name is Corey Meyer, co-founder of Steelhead Outdoors. We proudly design and manufacture innovative safes, vaults, and firearm storage devices in Shakopee, Minnesota. But I'm also a board member and contributor of the Foundry Entrepreneur Network that Tapke mentioned. The Foundry has been beneficial to us in many ways. It connects companies facing similar problems. Our members come from the greater area, including 19 cities. Our group has naturally drifted towards companies that make physical products. These manufacturing companies, when they grow, they have the highest demand for space, equipment, and human resources, making the biggest impact on our communities. The support is invaluable as our young companies set out to disrupt industries dominated by high-powered competitors. The provided flyer lists Minnesota as the 48th state in the nation in entrepreneurism. While our state has some great companies that call Minnesota home, when these companies grow, they inevitably face consolidation or acquisition. As these powerhouses move out, we need younger companies to take their place. Minnesota is a great place to plant a seed for a company, but without water and sunlight, nothing can grow. Without nurturing our startups, we will watch our job base and tax base shrink. The Hub is the perfect center for the startup community. Not only will it serve as a home to the Foundry, but also be home to critical programs to cultivate the next generation of entrepreneurs and technically skilled workers. The Hub will provide meeting and co-working space, advanced manufacturing resources, and most importantly, a place for connection. It will act as a greenhouse to help the seeds of ideas grow into companies that can benefit the community. I've watched our Foundry members do some incredible things over the past 4 years. The Hub is a critical part of our next chapter. Starting a business is hard, and the support of our network tilts the odds towards success. An investment in the Hub is an investment in the business future of Minnesota. Thanks for your time and support, and thank you for consideration in funding entrepreneurism in Minnesota.
Thank you. Quick close of comments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. So as Corey explained, this would be a really great project for small businesses and entrepreneurs and help to grow the economy in Minnesota and our local area as well. And so this is a city of Shakopee. This is has particular importance to me because we started this project while I was mayor and want to definitely see it get so we have higher education and ability to support entrepreneurs south of the river.
Next up, House File 466, Representative Tapke, and then Representative Fisher, you have the next two bills. Please proceed.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair and members. This is the second project that we have in bonding. Today is a project for completing a trail segment. So this is a 20-mile trail segment that connects region-wide through our area. It will connect across the Minnesota River, which there are very few connections across the Minnesota River into the West Metro and across into the South Metro, and will have a big impact and can complete a loop that will definitely support our communities. And have Ruth Mosier here from Shakopee to talk about how this project will impact her and our communities.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning and thank you.
My name is Ruth Moser, and I've lived in Minnesota for most of my life. Our family moved to Shakopee about 35 years ago and have been part of the growth and development of the population here. I'm here to support this regional trail expansion project. My husband and I enjoy road biking together on our tandem bicycle, which he calls Marriage Boot Camp. We've been fortunate to have enjoyed many road rides on quiet country and state roads with good shoulders. Road riders love wide shoulders, and I'm sure the drivers do too. A favorite loop of ours is County Road 14 because it provides access to other great routes. Unfortunately, County Road 14 has little or no shoulder for several miles, and so I basically hold my breath and pray that no cars will come to pass while we're on the road, and I'm comforted by our headlights and taillights on our bike. It wasn't until COVID that we began to explore and love the Louisville Swamp area, and now we're really excited about the new Miriam Junction with the bridge access to Carver County. The new proposal adds another 4+ miles along County Road 14 to connect with the Big Woods Trail on and on through Prior Lake and to Dakota County. This trail connection will allow us to ride through Carver and Scott counties on off-road trails filled with so many wonderful attractions. We've been fortunate to have ridden many miles on our beautiful Minnesota bicycle trails as well as quiet highways. We've also visited many states and Canada, and usually with three or more bicycles on board. We've observed the communities with great biking trails filled with families and e-bikers enjoying their rides. We've loved the cultural attractions we can bike to. We've used our metro trails for commuting and for pleasure. I think that building trails builds healthy communities, and I encourage you to consider the health and economic benefits the region will enjoy with this investment. Thank you.
Thank you. Closing comments, Representative Tapke.
Thank you very much, Chair Lee, and members again for this bill. This is a really important one. This is a Scott County bill that will make a large connection for safety issues and for making sure that we're able to be safe and active in the South and West Metro. So thank you very much for everyone's support for the projects.
Thank you. Next up, Chair Fisher, House File 1609, and then House File 211. Please proceed, Chair Fisher.
Thank you. Just, Chair, we're starting off with which one, 1609 or?
1609.
Okay. Thank you, Chair and Committee, for the opportunity to present 1609. This is a request for $3 million in general obligation bonds to support Kids in Need Foundation. They support educators and students in under-resourced schools. In 2024, Kids in Need supported nearly 4 million students across the country and over 13,000 schools. Here in Minnesota, it was over 128,000 students, over 4,000 teachers, and over 436 under-resourced schools. They distribute over $42 million worth of school supplies each year in partnership with places as Crayola, 3M, P&G, BIC, Medtronic, etc. I have with me today Corey Gordon, CEO of Kids in Need.
Logan, please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairs, members. My name is Corey Gordon, CEO of Kids in Need Foundation. As Representative Fisher said, we're a 30-year-old national organization headquartered here in the Twin Cities. We currently support over 4,000 teachers every year here in Minnesota and over 130,000 or roughly 130,000 students. And we do it a couple different ways. Our flagship resource center is currently located in Roseville. We're looking to move towards our new headquarters in Little Canada. And from there, teachers who are able to come to our location basically shop for free. They can come once a quarter to replenish the supplies they need for themselves, their students, and their classrooms. And on average, when they leave with roughly $450 worth of free supplies that they're able to use as needed most with their students. Those are the teachers who can come to our location. So teachers all throughout the Twin Cities, but we also have teachers who will drive down from Duluth, Bemidji, they drive up from Rochester, come across from Worthington, Mankato. When they're coming to the Twin Cities, they come and shop for free at our location. Part of this bill is to expand the programs and services we're providing so we can support more teachers at our store, but also to expand what we're doing throughout the rest of the state of Minnesota. For example, we direct ship to schools all throughout the state of Minnesota. So whether we are direct shipping supplies and sending truckloads to Worthington, or currently we're sending a truckload of supplies to Polk County, we want to be able to ship to all schools throughout the entire state. So this is a statewide asset that we're proud of. It's direct support to students and teachers, and we operate with a 95% efficiency ratio. And this enables us, as I said, to grow so that we can provide more resources and support more teachers and students here in the great state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. See no questions, closing comments. Chair Fisher.
Thank you for the opportunity. I hope you'll consider this bill going forward.
Thank you. Next up, Chair Fisher, House File 211. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Chair Lee, Chair Franson, and committee for the opportunity to present House File 211. This is for the Public Safety Center in the East Metro area that is located in Maplewood. This is for an expansion out of the center. Public safety has changed greatly over the last number of years, is where typically these days it's requiring responses not only from fire but also police, and many of our communities have embedded social workers. And so it's providing that capability where they can all train together, and also to do that with the neighboring communities. It's very often you've got multiple communities responding to larger situations, and so this would allow that to expansion to occur to be able to better meet our needs. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my test fire and EMS chief, Michael Mondor, and I also have for questions Director Chief Bierdemann with me.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Lee, Chair Friends, and committee members, my name is Michael Mondor. I'm the Fire and EMS Chief for the City of Maplewood. Thank you for the opportunity today to testify in support of House File 211. Thank you, Representative Fisher and Lilly, for your ongoing support on this important initiative. As fire and police chiefs, we see firsthand how vital it is that our public safety professionals, fire, police, and EMS, and embedded social workers train together before they're asked to respond together. The East Metro facility, built through a regional partnership in 2016, has become an important public safety resource in the region. 27 agencies across six counties in Minnesota, including this state agencies such as Century College and the Minnesota BCA, actively use this facility, and we've received additional support from several other agencies. In total, these agencies serve nearly 600,000 Minnesotans. This expansion would add 55,000 square feet of training space, including a de-escalation and crisis intervention classrooms, a critical decision-making lab, training and safety range, and wellness facilities. Further, recruitment and retention of police, fire, and EMS professionals has faced unprecedented challenges over the past several years. This investment creates pathways for our communities to create opportunities for prospective fire, police, and EMS candidates who may not have otherwise entered the profession. The spaces are designed to prepare responders for high-stress, real-world scenarios, supporting their physical, mental, and professional readiness, and allowing for positive outcomes for our public safety professionals and the communities that we serve. The Northeast Metro currently lacks a comprehensive integrated public safety training hub. This expansion would fill that need. Training together fosters trust and coordination that directly impacts outcomes during critical incidents. We respectfully ask for your support on this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Mondor. Members, questions? Seeing none, closing comments, Chair Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Lee. This is a great bill that will address the needs for our region. Looking for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Representative Green, House File 246. After that, we have Representative Paredes Vega, House File 208, and then Chair Hansen with two bills at the end. Welcome, Representative Green. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members, for time on today's docket. House File 246 requests funding for the City of Edina in partnership with Hennepin County and Minnesota Department of Transportation to replace both the Vernon Avenue and Highway 100 bridges as part of a complex interchange project. This project, when complete, will improve regional transportation, enhance regional connectivity as well, expand accessibility to support local economic growth, improve pedestrian safety, and opens up land space to allow for additional emergency services along the Highway 100 corridor. I will now pass over to my testifier, Chad Milner, Engineering Director for the City of Edina, to provide.
Welcome, Director.
Details.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Committee. Chad Milner, Engineering Director, City of Edina. The size and lack of existing sidewalks, the lack of separation from heavy traffic make the street unsafe and uncomfortable for many pedestrians, creating significant barriers to access. This project prioritizes safety of all users by enhancing the separated pedestrian routes and improving overall traffic operations, ensuring a safer and more efficient travel experience for all. And by combining city and county projects, we can minimize construction disruptions and maximize funding efficiencies. And I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Director. So, you know, questions, closing comments, Representative Green.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just want to make a comment that this collaborative effort demonstrates how cities, counties, and the state can be effective financial stewards when we work together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, Representative Perez Vega, House File 208. And Representative, I understand you have a A1 amendment for reference. Can you explain that amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The A1 amendment is to delete the line 8 on page 1 and enter the delete the Minnesota Latino Museum.
Sounds good. Please proceed.
Thank you, members, chair, members of this committee that I am a part of and love this committee. It's always fun. I bring for today HF 208, relating to capital investment, appropriating money for the Minnesota Latino Museum for appropriation of $10 million. This is something that is very near to my heart because I am a first Latina generation here in the state of Minnesota, in District 65B that I represent, which is the first Latino community in the state of Minnesota that has now expanded to every district in the state. Whether we talk about the history and the context of arts, how that is connected to our state, I think about the entrepreneurship and I think about the demographics, the growing demographics, especially when I think about our businesses that have impacted how we expand our arts through murals, through dance, through music, through our avenues of being able to incorporate educational curriculum so that all Minnesotans grow together. When I think about the entrepreneurship and arts, I think about the barrio of District del Sol and 65B, specifically with the Frias family of Boca Chica, who have the oldest restaurant, Latino restaurant in Minnesota for over 60 years delivering amazing food, but not only food, an avenue of art that is historical content in their facility. And they started out by selling taquitos in carts, which now is expanding into 40 years of over entrepreneurship on Cesar Chavez Street with the families of the Silvas who have been able to provide muralism along with growing entrepreneurship to markets, being the first Latino market in the state of Minnesota. It's implemented to know this history because now in Alexandria of Minnesota, we have mercados of small import goods that everyone can enjoy, even amongst a population that's only 600 Latinos that's expanding, called Paisanos, which is a market that I look forward to visiting because I've only been able to catch a Casa Jalisco with a good meal there. So with more, I think about arts. I think about community. I think about all Minnesotans being able to gather in a location. So with that, I'd like to give the motion of going to my testifiers to give more information of the beauty of what Latino arts and history is to the state of Minnesota.
Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Buenos dias, co-chairs and members of this committee. My name is Aaron Johnson Ortiz. I also go by Aaron, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Latino Museum. We're very excited about this project. We're partnering with the city of St. Paul. We have a promise of a location on the Mississippi River at Harriet Island Regional Park, which is part of the Regional Parks District. Minnesota is home to many beautiful and amazing cultural institutions, from the American Swedish Institute to the Museum of Russian Art, to the Hmong Cultural Center, and many others. And yet, Latinos still do not have a cultural center or museum in our home state. Over 400,000 Latinos live and work in our wonderful state of Minnesota. We are a community that is growing rapidly and have an enormous economic and cultural impact on this state and also across the country. By 2060, the U.S. Census estimates that one in every four Americans will be Latino, and our economic impact is also growing rapidly. Last year, UCLA published a study showing that Latinos in the United States represent the fifth largest economy in the world, and our economic growth is growing faster than any country in the world, including China and India. We believe that tourism, arts, culture, and entertainment are an important part of economic development, and our proposal, which is right on the Mississippi River, the perhaps the most important natural asset of the state and then certainly of the Twin Cities. And we believe that this is going to bring an amazing tourism, jobs, and community development to this region. I'm very grateful to Representative Perez Vega for supporting us in this project, and of course to Director Rosa Toc from the Minnesota Council of Latino Affairs, who I want to pass to next.
Welcome, Director. Please identify yourself. Proceed.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Chair and Madam Co-Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rosa Toc, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. As you know, we are a nonpartisan state agency representing approximately 400,000 Latinos in the state, and our main task is to inform and advise this body on the pressing issues affecting Latino Minnesotans. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning in support of this bill and thank Representative Perez Vega for being its champion. All I want to add to the eloquence that Representative Perez share with you and what Mr. Ortiz so brilliantly explained is that not only is this bill bipartisan, but its authors in the House represent the rich tapestry and nuanced diversity of Latino Minnesotans with very deep roots in Minnesota and Latin America and the Caribbean, from Colombia to Mexico to Puerto Rico and beyond. Thank you all the authors for your vision and support of this project. Latino Minnesotan history and cultures are U.S. history. For Latino Minnesotans, especially young people, it will be a place where they can see their history and heritage honored. For all Minnesotans, it will be an opportunity to learn, connect, and appreciate the richness of Latino culture. 11 other Latino organizations under the umbrella of the Minnesota Latino Leadership Alliance, or MIA, are also behind this bill. I also invite you to join us and support the Minnesota Latino Museum. Gracias.
Chair Kostick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, appreciate your efforts. Amazing work on this. It's a big project. You and I had a little discussion. I see you have some letters of support in here. We had a little discussion about the CLUES organization. They were kind of embarking on their own separate DART thing. Sounds like this is resolved. If you could just comment that for the public record, I appreciate the letter of support in here.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kosnick, first and foremost, thank you for co-authoring this with me. Building initiatives as to what leadership looks like in the endeavors of arts should be led by artists and should be led by the artists that started the arts institutions amongst organizations like CLUES. I have the member giving testimony to my left right here who brought arts to CLUES and continues to establish how it's important when we connect our arts with social services and child care. But this would be an institution specifically dedicated to arts and history of the Latino commitment in Minnesota.
Chair Kosnick.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the efforts and the response, and I think that it is important to have a separate arts organization that focuses on that and expands on the benefits of that. So thank you.
Close the comments, Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you. This is a space of Minnesota's rich cultural landscape that we're staring at in these packets. We're talking about economic contributions and impact, a place for education, community, and culture exchange, and strengthening Minnesota's commitment to inclusion. As a proud Latina Boricua of the first Latino district in the state of Minnesota, when you talk about cultural district, I carry this with pride and expanding it to everyone who needs to learn about the connections of all of our communities. But also, hey, we're talking about Harriet Island in the capital city here. We're talking about how we connect Duluth with Riverboat festivals, connecting into spaces of culinary arts and contributions of respecting everyone in every language and every angle. Latinos are not a race, okay? We are a population of people. We are white, brown, black, and indigenous. And I would love for everyone to celebrate that with me in passing moving forward with HF 208. Muchas gracias. And para bailar la bamba, se necesita una poca de capital investment.
That's true. That's thank true. You. Next up, we have Chair Hansen. First up will be House File 224. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chairs. House File 224 is the South St. Paul Public Works Facility. For those of you that were on the committee the last 2 years, you may remember it for the chicken strips that were provided at that. It is an old facility built in 1970. What we are asking for the bonding committee is $13 million in state bonding. That's to cover 50% of the cost for a new public works building. The public works building is old and the city is old. We know that things are going to be tight. You will note that it says support property acquisition, pre-design, design, construction, furnishing, equipment. Anything you can provide for this, hint, design or pre-design would be appreciated. So I have with me the mayor of South St. Paul to talk about the public works facility.
Welcome, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you very much, Mayor Jimmy Francis, Chair, members of the committee. Many of you have been to South St. Paul. Those that don't, I offer you a 50-cent tour of the center of the universe anytime. And just to reiterate the fact that South St. Paul is a needy community. We're not greedy. We're an old community that could use some help, and we have skin in the game in all of our projects because we know it's important, and we are good stewards of dollars that have been given by this committee and others to our city, and so we would do that again, and thank you for your consideration.
See no question. Closing comments.
Any support you could provide would be appreciated.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Next up will be House File 225. Chair Hansen, please proceed.
Thank you, chairs and committee. This is the South St. Paul Swimming Pool, and this does talk about design and pre-design. We have actually done some of that work, so we are in a public participation process in the community, and this one is where we would need some additional money to begin work on construction. The South St. Paul Pool, I think the thing to remember is it currently loses 12,000 gallons of water per day, roughly 5% of the total value, volume. The YMCA in West St. Paul left. There is just not many opportunities to teach kids how to swim. We have one of the most diverse communities and one of the most poor communities. We have the lowest property tax capacity in Dakota County. We rank 153rd out of Minnesota's 200 largest cities. So we don't have the capacity to do a lot, but working in partnership, we feel, from the community is very important to get this pool done. We have put some money in for design and pre-design from the city already, and the mayor can attest to that.
Welcome again, Mayor. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you very much. Again, Mayor Jimmy Francis, City of South St. Paul. Thank you again for considering this. This is a real regional option here with our pool. And just to go back to my other comments about how we are with funds and what we do with our infrastructure, this pool has been operating since 1956, and we've been good stewards of that. It is at the end of its useful life, and the region could use the help. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. So you know, questions, closing comments. Oh, Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. And I don't think we saw this on our last tour, right?
We were there.
Where were we there?
Chair Hansen.
I think we drove by the pit.
Okay.
Yes, but we didn't stop.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you. Where's the next nearest public swimming pool from this for the kids? Thank you.
The city of West St. Paul has two outdoor pool that is, they're 1 year behind us in lifeline of their pool.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Close the comments.
Any support you could provide would be appreciated, and feel free to visit. Happy to give tours.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. And that ends the bill portion of the agenda. So really, I just want to say thank you to all members for accommodating our heavy schedule and for keeping your remarks and questions short. So just know that I really appreciate that. Chair Franzen will hold the gavel on Thursday for April 3rd. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.